Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
The public is becoming increasingly aware that Israel is the world's premier 21st century apartheid state. It is an ethnocracy. The only way you can have a Jewish state is for you to oppress everybody in your state who's not a Jew. And Israel does exactly that. They've got Jewish-only roads. They've got different color license plates for people who are not Jews.
That's the voice of Bruce Dixon from the Black Agenda Report. On this week's show, we speak to Bruce about the terrible unfolding tragedy in Palestine and why the black political movements are not supporting Palestinians and what we as ordinary citizens can do to turn things around.
We are very privileged today to have Bruce Dixon. He's one of the editors of Black Agenda Report. Very privileged to have you on our program. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me, Sylvia.
There's over 3 weeks now that Gaza has been under fire. Can we talk a little bit about an article you recently wrote about where is the black resistance in the U.S. in regards to this massacre?
Well, not specifically where is the black resistance, because there's a good deal of that, but where is the black political class? Why is the black political class, and why are all the established civil rights organizations and people like the Congressional Black Caucus and all these folks, why are they practically invisible on this? And when they are invisible, like the rally that was held in New York City just a few days ago, they are resolutely and completely on the side of the Israeli occupation. Charlie Rangel, for one, who's the longtime congressman from Harlem, New York, just addressed a rally in New York City where he basically parroted the entire Israeli line. The U.S. House of Representatives has repeatedly passed unanimous or nearly unanimous endorsements of the Israeli action. Even Barbara Lee, Congressman Barbara Lee out of Oakland, California, who was the sole vote on the House floor against the authorization for military force in Iraq and Afghanistan, even she cast a vote in favor of this, resolution endorsing I'm not sure whether she cast a vote in favor or whether she abstained. I was just looking that up before you called. but either way, she has not lifted her voice against it, and the black political class has not lifted their voices against it. The first reason, we think there's three reasons for this. The first and obvious reason is that the black political class, from the NAACP, the National Action Network, to our politicians, are often in the pockets of their funders, no matter who those funders happen to be. On questions, not just this question, but questions like network neutrality, the availability of the internet, and keeping phone rates low, the National Action Network, the NAACP, and much of our black caucus votes with their funders. And many of the funders are Zionists and pro-Zionists, so they don't want to buck their funders. The number two reason that they are silent on this is that they have developed over the last few years, since the ascension of President Obama to the White House, they have developed an absolutely slavish habit of dependence and deference to the White House. A great incident proving that was the Shirley Sherrod mess a few years ago. The NAACP basically knew who Shirley Sherrod was. They knew her husband, and they're very aware of their 50 years' work of civil rights work and human rights work and advocacy down there in Albany, Georgia. Everybody down here knows it, and everybody at the NAACP headquarters in D.C. knows it. But when the White House and the Department of Agriculture fired them, instead of calling the White House and saying, wait a minute, boss, you don't know who Shirley and Charlie are and what they've been doing. What did the NAACP do? They just doubled down on whatever the White House did. In this case, the White House, President Obama went to an iftar dinner of Muslims during Ramadan and blatantly insulted the people there by talking about Israel's, quote, right to defend itself, unquote. Our black political class just will not cross the White House. They just don't have the stomach for it or the spine for it, even when they know it's wrong. The third reason that our black political class is silent is the most devastating and, to me, the most important. The third reason is that they are caught in a real, real dilemma, a real quandary. Their entire careers depend on the fiction, the brand, if you will, of theirs, that they are heirs to the civil rights movement and the freedom movement, that they are champions of the oppressed and the little guy, and fighters against apartheid in South Africa, domestically here, in the United States of America. But the public is becoming increasingly aware that Israel is the world's premier 21st century apartheid state. It is an ethnocracy. The only way you can have a Jewish state is for you to oppress everybody in your state who's not a Jew. And Israel does exactly that. They've got Jewish-only roads. They've got different color license plates for people who are not Jews so they can be profiled at a distance. They've got laws against intermarriage, and much of the country is surrounded by walls, and they are encroaching upon the remaining land and possessions of Palestinians each and every day. And more and more of the world and more Americans are becoming aware of this. And the black misleadership class, the black political class, is caught in the quandary. Their brand is that they opposed apartheid, but now, because of their funders and because of the president, they are backing apartheid. And so they really don't know what to do. They are scared.
Is it really fair, though, to ask the black political class to carry a burden that, quite honestly, belongs to everyone, not just black, people who have made, some kind of name for themselves for fighting for injustice? One of the things that I wonder sometimes is, the apartheid system that exists in Palestine cannot be sustained, if people were to take on their responsibilities seriously. When we look at what is happening, this idea of the way the media reports, it's sort of like there's a war going on and there's two equal armies fighting each other. But no one tells you, or at least we don't hear it, that, one is a nuclear state armed to the teeth, that can rival any other major empire. And the other is a bunch of people trying to fight with dated weapons. And so I'm wondering if maybe we can talk a little bit about how our own identities as oppressed people have become so internalized that the simple ability to have a so-called president that's black has completely negated a history of resistance. And now we are unable to see the class relationship that, not all black people are equal. There are black people who come from struggle and who understand their responsibility. And there are people like Barack Obama who is not born out of our struggle, who is not representative of our voices. So how do we create those spaces where we can see each other and have these discussions? Because it's not about black and white or where black people stand. But for me, I think it's about recognizing, the bigger issue is where have we lost our way, in that some struggles can be given a pass, like in the case of Israel, by virtue of this narrative of the victim, the oppressor is now being portrayed as the victim. You know, Israel has the right to defend itself, we're told. But what about the right of Palestinians to exist and to coexist in their land?
Well, that's a conversation that we have to push to the forefront. Unfortunately, our public conversation in the United States takes place largely over media that is owned by a handful of monopoly corporations. And those monopoly corporations are deeply, deeply, deeply integrated into the state and the ruling apparatus of this country. And so they've been pushing the Israeli myth upon us, the myth of Israeli righteousness upon us. And they have actually been hiding. They have been actively colluding to conceal and hide the vicious ethnocracy that exists in Israel. Most Americans flat out don't know this, although more and more are finding it out now. Social media, and I have a lot of bad, bad, bad things to say about corporate social media. We can talk about that another time. But, one of the benefits of social media is that people's inboxes have been flooded with pictures of Israeli atrocities, with firsthand accounts of this and that. You've got outfits like the Real News Network, and outfits like yours and others, which have been busy pushing forward a more accurate narrative of what's going on in the Middle East. And finally, you have Al Jazeera, which is actually a cable, present in the cable packages that many people buy. So many people are having access to, news that is, at least from that part of the world, a little less filtered than it used to be. I think that we cannot underestimate the importance of the news sources that people have access to or don't have access to informing their ideas about these things. And, the fact that people are receiving news about the Middle East from a number of sources rather than some of the same old sources is contributing to people learning more about this issue and learning more about the real nature of Israel and its apartheid state and its occupation than they ever knew before. So that's what's happening here. The job that you're doing, that we're trying to do, and that other people are trying to do to put some of our leaders and some of our supposed representatives on the spot is really essential, because as humans, we normally define ourselves in opposition to something else. So if we really, really want to define ourselves, redefine ourselves as a people of struggle, then we have to identify what and who we're struggling against. And calling out the black class of supposed leaders for their utter silence and paralysis on issues like this is essential to helping create that awakening.
I was very moved by your article when he writes that throughout the 1970s and 1980s, black Americans were always leading the struggle against apartheid in America. The question then is, how do we get back there? And I was thinking about the way that the identity of nation kind of captivates people in ways that are sometimes inexplicable, because this very ephemeral idea of nation, what is a nation state? This idea of imaginary lines that dictate one person belongs and the other one is an outsider. Part of our struggle of colonization against racism, against, the capitalist machinery of turning people into commodities that can then be displaced or, sold out. One of the questions that I often ask is, part of us is recognizing our multi-layer ways of connecting and participating in the struggle. In many ways, I would argue that there is an apartheid being developed within the United States, and it's an economic apartheid, which, we always think that the apartheid regime was all about land, but it was really about economic and wealth, that gets accumulated by those who have access, privilege to the land, to the resources. In some ways, I look at Gaza and I think there's a reason why this becomes so public, and yet it's invisible because the way it's reported is inaccurate. But I always think what else is happening in the world? What else is happening among, you know, in our own countries? What else is happening outside of this place, you know, that is being ignored, is being made invisible by this current sensationalized reporting of something that's not even accurately reported, you know, when we hear that Israel is defending itself against some imminent threat.
Yeah, well, you put your finger on it, Sylvia, when you pointed to, in a way, the real obsolescence and irrelevance of nationality, the nation state, and national borders to the way life is actually lived. You know, this show is called Latin Waves. I don't need to tell you about, you know, what NAFTA did, okay, and how NAFTA, was basically an act of economic imperialism whereby the United States tightened down its subjugation of most of its neighbors to the south and enforced a regime where capital and goods could flow freely across international lines to the benefit of the center of the empire, capitalist bosses here, but to the detriment of working people on, you know, throughout the hemisphere. People were driven off their land in Mexico, and they're being driven off the land in Central America, and they were first forced to maquiladoras on the border, and then when those dried up and went to China and the Philippines, people were forced to cross the border and work here undocumented. And now their families are being ravaged by the unprecedented wave of deportations that Obama is carrying out. And we see the same thing in Europe also, where you have the economies of most of Africa are in shambles. There's no medical care, no health care systems, no public health care systems, very little education. And people are walking across the length of the African continent to try to get into Europe, walking across. And, so the same thing is happening there as is happening in this hemisphere. So, national borders are, have long been, not friends to, working people and ordinary people. They seem to be only friends to, the rich and the powerful.
In many ways, then, our struggle, to me, is to recognize that, not only do we share responsibility when we see the way this process is naturalized, the way that this violence is naturalized and legitimized as, accepting this idea that Israel is simply defending itself and it has the right to use whatever arsenal it has at its possession to attack, kill, maim, people. And it's so called defense.
That is so, so very pernicious and silly. If someone said that Canada had a right to exist or France has a right to exist, they'd be looked at kind of foolish. Well, like, why does Canada have a right to exist? Israel is the only state in the world that supposedly has a, quote, right to exist. What's really meant by that? You can't make Canada disappear. It's the second largest country on earth. The land is not going anywhere, and the people are not going anywhere. You can't make France disappear. So what do they really mean when they say Israel has a right to exist? What they really mean is that Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish state, as a state where one ethnicity, one tribe, has rights over all the rest of the tribes. And all the rest of the inhabitants. And, since Israel does this uniquely among all the nations of the earth, they are the only ones who assert that they have a right to exist. And, Americans and people around the world are increasingly discovering that Israel's, exclusive right to exist is just a license to rob its neighbors and to occupy and mistreat and commit genocide against the former inhabitants of the land, of the Palestinians. Israel is never going to know peace until it becomes a country where everybody who is located in that country enjoys the same rights. And right now, we're a long, long way from that.
The way we allow this process to continue, to be naturalized, Israel did not exist as of 1948. It was put there by political decisions. It was created as a state within the land of Palestinians. And so for people to remember the history of how one nation state becomes, you know, this structure that now seems to be so permanent. And yet, as of 1948, it did not exist. It was the Palestinians who were in this territory, whose land this was and continues to be, and whose land has been appropriated. You know, they now, more than 90% of the land, Palestinian land, has been removed from Palestinian possession. The Palestinians have been dispossessed. And this ethnic group, as you rightfully call it, has been allowed, sort of by divine grace. You know, we struggle against monarchies because the king used to tell us that it was the God who gave him divine right to rule over people. And, you know, we did away with monarchies, but it seems that somehow we have yet to learn, you know, to really liberate ourselves of those internalized oppressions that we have allowed to continue. Where do you see our strength moving forward? Because we have demonstrated strength in the past, you know, in our struggle against apartheid in South Africa. We have demonstrated strength in our solidarity with movements in Latin America. How do we now move forward, as one people, as peoples who have experienced colonization, racism, and who understand that unless we are all free, no one.
I think you touched on something when you talked about, you know, the rule of kings and the rest of this. Where are most of the monarchies, of the functioning monarchies in the world right now? They're in the Arab world, and they're all monarchies that were installed by the United States, France, and Britain. You've got a king in Morocco. You've got a king in Saudi Arabia. You've got a king in Jordan. Okay, don't you? You've got sultans and kings in the Gulf states, in Bahrain, and in and the Gulf states are really teeny, tiny little places that are just palaces, military bases, and oil wells that they want to call a country. And all of this is ruled over by kings. And like I said, all these kings are installed by the United States. So, the situation in Israel-Palestine is just, one corner of the awfulness that, empire has created in the Middle East so that it could extract, the oil there. And the situation of Israel-Palestine really was predictable. And it was predicted by quite a number of insightful Jewish thinkers, back in the 1940s, the foremost of whom is probably Hannah Arendt, the author of Eichmann in Jerusalem, which was a book, about, the trial of Adolf Eichmann, who was, the Nazi who they, convicted, not just in his own crimes, but, they did a little show trial for him and convicted him of the deaths of 6 million, Jews. And this trial took place in the mid-1950s in Jerusalem. Hannah Arendt prophesied that nationalism, she said, was bad enough, but a nationalism that depends on the grace of distant foreign powers and arrays itself against all the original inhabitants of the land and all the inhabitants of all the lands of the Middle East is doomed to failure, and it's doomed to dependence, and it's doomed to turn itself into a military fascist kind of dictatorship. And that will be the only way it will be able to persist, is going to be what she called it, a new Sparta, a kind of permanent fascist dictatorship. And that's basically what 60 years on has happened in Israel. This is not something that was unforeseen. Plenty of people, did see it and did see the flaws in it early. But it does serve the imperialists. It does serve empire. And so this murderous state, this murderous machine that Israel has constructed, has been allowed to exist and continues to exist. What can we do about it? Well, the main thing that we on the outside can do about it is we can contribute to and build the global movement to boycott, to divest from, and to sanction Israel. Participation in the global BDS movement is something that the authorities really, really, really don't want to see happen. They're going so far as to ban speakers and speech on campuses in the United States and Canada about the BDS movement. So it's the Achilles heel, and it's part of what we have to do here. But we also have to, I mean, early on you said, is it fair to make our black political class carry this weight? It is absolutely fair. Okay, these people and our Latino political class as well, these people base their careers on the notion, on the brand, that they represent Latinos and that they represent blacks and that they are a product of our people's just struggle against injustice and against apartheid and oppression here. You know, we have to not let up on the contradiction between their claims to support struggles for justice here and the fact that they are backing apartheid in Israel with all their might every single day. And when we do that, we are doing, when we do that and when we build the movement to boycott, to divest from, and to sanction Israel, we are keeping our part of the bargain, and we are keeping faith with the people of Palestine, who, when they had a chance to, did express their support of us.
It's important to recognize that not only do we support sometimes with our voices, sometimes our silence also speaks volume, and our silence can also be received as consent. So if we're not speaking against it, going along with the flow, whether it's President Barack Obama or Bush or Cheney in power, you know, still doesn't excuse our responsibility. And you speak about it right in your article. You know, it's without solidarity, we lose part of our humanity. Thank you so much for being with us today. How can people access your work, Black Agenda Report?
Black Agenda Report is found on the internet at www.blackagendareport.com. That's www.blackagendareport.com, and we've got a new issue out every Wednesday.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Sylvia.
We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.